What is going on, everybody? For this week's episode, Sam and I talk a lot about Bitcoin and cryptocurrency. We do a little bit of investing talk. But the main thing I want to let you guys know about is how we recorded this episode and actually the last episode as well. So we found this really cool app called Stereo that allows us to have live podcasts. And people that are listening can go ahead and ask us questions and make comments in real time. So you're going to notice that there are different people that pop in and out in the episode. They are not with us in the same room. They are simply just listening live and getting to give us some input throughout the episode. If you are interested in doing something like that and you want to listen to us live, we do record these episodes on Wednesday nights, usually around 8:15. So go ahead and look for Stereo, download the app, and then you can search for us. My name on Stereo is Finance Nerd. Sam's name on Stereo is Trading Nerd. Go ahead and follow us there, and then you can listen real time, or you can just wait till we get the episode edited and uploaded on here. So either way, you're going to get the same content. It's just we think it's really cool to be able to have that option to talk to you guys in real time. So hope you enjoy this episode, and we'll talk to you next week.
What is Bitcoin?
I mean, Bitcoin is a decentralized way of transfer value peer-to-peer. That's essentially it. So you move from value across space and time.
So there's a lot of people who keep calling it the digital gold, right? Why do they call it digital gold? And what's so wrong with gold? What is gold doing now for people? Because if you're not a millionaire or a billionaire, you never think about gold. You think a gold chain, a gold ring, but gold to store your money is not something you think about. So explain what gold is doing now and how Bitcoin is replacing that.
So, I mean, traditionally, people use gold as a store of value. So essentially, like, if you have a lot of money or you don't even have that much money, right? Like, you just go buy gold and then the price stay the same or go up. So which means it protects your purchasing power, right? Because even if the government prints a lot of money, it's hard to devalue your gold because it actually takes time and effort to mine the gold from the ground. And that's how the scarcity itself is what protecting your purchasing power. So what Bitcoin did is that it's a perfect store of value because there's only 21 million Bitcoin, so it's limited. There's so many, but there's unlimited amount of gold technically. And as we advance, like, we can start astro mining some days. Yeah, and then you can make more of it. And then that's what the shitty part about gold is. Also, another problem with gold is hard to move. Like, if I try to pay you $100,000 in gold, that'll be very difficult. Because I had to, like, ship it to your house. And it costs a lot of money to do that.
So let's backtrack a little bit, right? So you said gold is a store of value. And simply what that means is that I can store the value of my money, I can store it within gold. And the reason you would want to do that, well, somebody could say, well, why can't I just keep the money in the bank? Because there is this nice little thing called inflation. And so your money sitting in the bank is subject to inflation, meaning the value of their money is going to go down as time goes by. And with gold, up to before Bitcoin, let's call it, before Bitcoin, gold was a really good way to buy something that was going to go up in value while you stored it in a bank or whatever you're storing it. So now, I mean, Bitcoin is doing the same thing, right?
Actually, gold doesn't go up in value. It makes sure you keep your purchasing power because there's inflation in gold too. Because there are people that mine gold, right? So when they mine gold, it adds to the current supply. And it just inflates a lot slower than money, like paper money, but it still inflates.
Okay, so would we have that issue with Bitcoin? Is there,
no.
There's no, that issue goes away because there's only a limited supply.
Not only that, is that the way how Bitcoin's designed. So here's the thing, right? If you're a gold miner, and as price of gold go up, you have incentives to mine more because your profit margin is wider. So as the price go up, there's more selling pressure from the gold miners because it's more profitable for them to mine. Does it make sense?
Makes sense.
Okay, but with Bitcoin mining, it doesn't matter how much money you invest in it. There's only so many Bitcoin. So the only thing that you add is security. So isn't it, because it's written in code, so there's nothing you can do. That's why it doesn't matter how much money you invest in Bitcoin mining. You're only going to get whatever that the system designed to pump out. And the only thing that you add is security. But with gold, it's not like that. It's like as price goes up, there's more seller.
So explain, why is it that as more miners come around, the only thing you're adding is security? So how does Bitcoin come to exist? Where does it come from? If it's a digital thing, why do we have to mine it? And what does that mean?
So you're mining it. So Bitcoin is created by Satoshi Nakamoto. And we don't know who he is. He's like, no one knows who he is. He could be dead, or he could just be holding his Bitcoin and just watching it go up. But the reason, so mining in Bitcoin is essentially means like you have a supercomputer and that's guessing like a password. And that's what essentially mining is. And then through the process of guessing the password, you're securing the network. Because you have more computer trying to guess. And then as there's more computer trying to guess the password, it becomes harder. So the difficulty goes up. Does it make sense?
That makes sense. So it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy, right? If I need to guess the password to get a Bitcoin, and the more people that are trying to guess it, the harder it gets, the more secure it becomes.
Yes.
But as time goes by, the incentive to mine that Bitcoin gets higher because the Bitcoin is going up in price.
Yeah, it becomes more valuable. So it becomes more valuable and people want to mine it to capture the profits. And yeah, so it's like a loop. It's like a positive loop.
So there's another thing. Yeah, you mentioned, right, there's 21 million. That's all that's ever going to be created.
Yeah.
But a lot of times people forget that Bitcoin has been around for a while now, and Bitcoin is digital. So if you had some Bitcoin in a computer and you forgot the password to that yourself, then now you've lost that. So there's a lot of coins that are out of circulation, meaning that nobody can ever use them, nobody can sell them, nobody can spend them. So really, there's less than 21 million. So that also drives the price up because now it's something that people want and there's less of.
Yeah, so one of the crazy things is with Bitcoin, because of closed system, in a closed system, you can't make more than 21 million. So let's say if you die and then you forgot your password, whatever, you don't give it to your kids, like everyone else wins. Their purchasing power just went up. It just became more valuable.
Yeah. Do you think there's a misconception that Bitcoin is money, is trying to replace money? Because as we discussed, right, Bitcoin is more of a store of value right now. So is it ever going to be something where I just go to the store and I tap my phone and pay for something? Or is it never going to be then there's going to be something else that does that for us?
I think eventually it will become a global reserve money. Like you will be able to go to a store and just beep, and then it won't cost, the transaction cost will be really, really low. You won't even notice it. It'll be cheaper than a Visa and MasterCard. They charge like 1.5%. Bitcoin can do that with less than 0.5%.
Yeah, but right now that cost, that 1.5%, is not we can discuss that, but it's not really on me as a consumer. When I swipe my card, I'm not paying 1.5, but you can argue that, well, the store is, and the store is putting that money on you, and so you really are. I understand that, but I'm not the one paying that at that time. It's the store. So do you think if we move to this decentralized, right? There's no banks, there's nobody who really owns it. It's just kind of this infrastructure that's kind of self-fulfilling. Are we going to have to pay for those fees?
Yeah, eventually we will, but it's so small you won't even notice it. Yeah. So like on the layer two of Bitcoin, the Lightning Network is essentially almost free. It's like very, very small. Like when you make a small transaction, you wouldn't care if they charge you 0.1 cent. You're like, okay, whatever.
Yeah, exactly. So not only will it be a store of value, you're thinking that in the future, it would also be a means of just going through life and paying for things as you need to. Like Tesla just announced, right? Yeah.
Medium of exchange.
Okay, so the medium of exchange. So Tesla actually just announced not only that they bought a bunch of Bitcoin, 1.5 billion, but that you can also buy things on the website. You can buy a car with your Bitcoin. So it's already happening, right? Now, you and I have always talked about this, how you might have a Bitcoin. Just let's say you have one and the Bitcoin gets to be worth $500,000 for one, right? In the next five to 10 years.
Yeah.
And now I want to buy a house and I grab that Bitcoin and I spend the whole thing, or I spend half of it, let's say, on a down payment or something like that. If we know that Bitcoin continues to go up in price, is it going to make sense to spend your Bitcoin to pay for trivial things like a house or your groceries or things like that, if you know that later on it's going to be worth much more? Is it going to make sense to do that?
I mean, at the end of the day, you got to eat, right? You can't eat your Bitcoin. So, yeah.
You're going to have to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's one of the problems I have people with, like, oh, if Bitcoin keep going up, people are just going to hoard it. I'm like, yeah, but back then with gold, the purchasing power keep going up. Eventually, you got to eat.
Right. It kind of, again, it just forces that circulation to happen because people need to pay for things.
Yeah, we're going to consume more people, right? Like, mm-hmm. If something we like, we're going to get it eventually. Or because, like, at the end of the day, our time in the world is finite. So, like, people are just like, all right, so I hoarded the money, like, throughout my life. I have, like, 10 years left. Might as well enjoy it. And then whatever I have left, it's passed on to my children, right? So in a closed system, the money would just circulate. So the velocity of money will go a lot faster. So, like, I'll just transact a lot, unlike today. Like, today, you can literally just, what you do is you have a lot of money and go buy assets, right? And the central bank will pump up the assets. And then you can live off of that forever. But the money doesn't flow. It doesn't flow. Because most of your money is trapped in one place.
So I know this is not financial advice for anyone listening, but what would you say if you had to tell someone kind of a strategy of how to approach Bitcoin? We'll talk about how to buy it and things to watch out for and things like that. But once you have the Bitcoin, for the long term, the next 5 years, the next 10 years, how do you think people should approach Bitcoin? Do I buy it and hold it for 10 years? Do I buy it and spend some when there's these big spikes? What do we do and how do we really like get the most out of it, according to you?
So for me, let's say I only have one Bitcoin, right? I will put 60% of it in a cold storage. I just gonna stay in my storage forever. I'm gonna put 30% of it in like a savings account that pay you interest. And then, so that's accumulate interest and I just let it accumulate over time. And then you just hold it. All you had to do is hold it and don't do anything about it. And the value of it will go up over time.
And at what point do I keep buying more Bitcoin so then I can spend some of it? Or at what point do I start grabbing that money and start spending it? Am I spending the interest? How am I going to use the money? Because I think that's always the question that I get. Well, I can't even use that money. And that's not true. We know that's not true. But in your plan, when do you take the profit and when do you like enjoy it, for lack of a better word?
Okay, so here's the thing, right? I have this problem with this idea of people like, oh, all I'm gonna do is hoard money or like putting a savings account and don't touch it till I'm retiring. Like, people's like, oh, I'm gonna retire at 65, right? I was like, technically, you can retire anytime you want.
Yeah.
Right? So one of the things, like, people's like, all right, give me a, like, a cookie cutter answer. Like, they want a formula, A, B, and C, and D. But life is not a formula. So it's like, you're asking me, like, when should I take a profit? And then you're going to follow my advice, like, A, B, C, D to a T, right? That doesn't work. You need to judge the situation on your own. For example, right? Let's say Bitcoin is going to triple every single year, right? And then, but your friend and you had a business idea. And then you guys think that business idea can make, I don't know, 100x with whatever the money you put in. And Bitcoin can only 3x. You're like, all right, so the opportunity cost of not using that money is higher than the opportunity cost of using it.
Yeah,
because if you don't use it, you only get 3 times the return, right? But if you do use that money, you might be able to generate 100 times the return. So you have to make that judgment call, right?
Yeah. Because all right, let's pause a little bit. We got a message here. Let's listen to that.
Are there Bitcoin ETFs and mutual funds?
So as of right now, there's no Bitcoin ETF, but there's a thing called a Grayscale Bitcoin Trust. So it's not like it's a trust product. It's not an ETF. But if you have a retirement account, you can buy the ticker's GBTC. You can put money in it. It has a premium. So I think it's like right now the premium is 17% above the spot price. But if you have like a IRA account, you can buy some of those and it'll track Bitcoin. So what the trust does, if they go buy physical Bitcoin and put it in a trust, and then when you buy GBTC, it represents a small percentage of that trust.
Yeah, so just to kind of re-explain that, if the place where you have a retirement account or an IRA or a Roth IRA, if those places offer Grayscale as an option, you possibly have the ability to buy that ticker. And then when you buy that ticker, now you're benefiting from them holding that Bitcoin. It's not necessarily an ETF because it doesn't hold any other assets within it like an ETF would, but it is holding the Bitcoin and you get to benefit from it. I hope that answered your question. So going back to what you were saying in the opportunity cost, right? And that's a concept that's thrown around all the time in finance. If you take a finance class, you've heard that term.
Yeah, but opportunity cost doesn't only apply to finance, it'll apply to everything you do.
Right. And so let's explain what it actually means in both money terms and then just anything else, right? So the way you were saying it was, I have one Bitcoin. I know, let's say for a fact, which I know it's not true, but for a fact, if I hold it, I'm going to get 3 times my money. And then I have this business opportunity with my friend that if I go into it, again, let's pretend it's for a fact, which I know it's not. For a fact, I'm going to make 10 times my money, right? So if I said, if you have $100 in Bitcoin and you leave it in there, you're going to make 300. But if you go and invest with your buddy, you're going to end those $100, they're going to turn into $1,000. Which one would you rather do, right? So the opportunity cost is that decision essentially. And like Sam is saying, that applies to anything. If I do this and not do that, what's the cost in not doing that? And so that's why you're saying there's no clear cut answer as to what you can do with your Bitcoin and what the plan is. It depends on you and you need to assess things continuously to make sure that it makes sense for you.
Yeah, because everyone's situation is completely different, right? Your situation is different than mine. So I cannot give you a formulaic answer. And then you try to apply it on your own and you fail. It's like, oh, this guy's full of shit. It's like, no, my situation is different than yours, so it does not apply to you, right?
Right. But at the same time, and I completely see what you're saying, and I completely agree with that, but at the same time, how do you answer that question? Because as we continue to do this, we're going to continue to get that question, right? Well, what should I do? And And I believe that you should always do your own research, make your own decisions, just like you're saying. But I still think we should, somebody can have an answer or can have a guideline, an outline, let's call it, for how to handle it, right? Do you have that?
How do you handle what?
So when is it a good time to take the money out? Is there ever a good time? All of those things. So how much money do I put in? I know a rule that goes around when Bitcoin was starting out or becoming more mainstream, everybody's saying, grab 1% of your net worth and put that into Bitcoin. And now that it's stabilizing, it's grab 5% of your money and put that into Bitcoin. And that's going to continue to grow and grow as Bitcoin becomes more and more stable. So what would you say? Oh, hold on. Before we get into that, we have one more message.
How long has Bitcoin been around?
Bitcoin has been around since 2009, if I'm not mistaken.
It's 2008. So Satoshi Nakamoto wrote a white paper in 2008. So that's when it started. But it didn't trade till like 2009, 2010. Because they were just like among a bunch of people. They were just testing it out.
Yeah. So it's been around for a while, right? And the reason a lot of people are not hearing about it until now, maybe you heard it back in the last cycle, you hear people talk about these cycles, is because each cycle has done something different for Bitcoin. And I'm going to let Sam kind of go into that. But each cycle has done something different, and different groups of people are hearing about it, and different groups of people are getting involved with it. So if you want to explain what each cycle has done and where we're at right now and why this one is so important.
Okay, so Bitcoin have a 4-year cycle. So the way how it works is that there's only 21 million Bitcoin. So in the first cycle, the cycle is determined by the production of Bitcoin. So I don't remember. So right now we're 900 per block, 1800. So I think the first cycle, it was 3,600 Bitcoin per block generated. So Bitcoin go through this 4-year cycle where the supply, so you produce less Bitcoin, get cut by half. So right now we're the third cycle where it got cut half, half, and half. So right now we'll only make 900 Bitcoin per cycle. So during the first cycle, when Bitcoin first started, most of the people that use Bitcoin are like computer nerds, because they're like people that's into computer science, and then they're like testing this idea for new form of money. When the second cycle kicked in, which is the last cycle, which that's when the speculator come in, like retail speculator, people who don't have that much money, they're betting on the price to appreciate a lot. And third cycle is this cycle, which is institution, like big companies. If you watch the news, you heard about Tesla buying a bunch of Bitcoin. So that's how you can see the domino, like from computer nerds to like a bunch of speculators, then to institution. Next cycle is supposed to be sovereign country. And then after that, essentially they're saying like Bitcoin's will become global money, essentially.
Yeah. So if you want a good example or a good analogy of what that looks like is, let's say a new, when like Alexa came out, right? When Alexa first came out, who bought one? Who had it in their house? People who are like super into technology that know about all the latest things. And so those were the only people who bought it. And then a few years later, maybe when the second Alexa came out, now there was some competitors. Now there was Google Home. Now there was Apple coming into the game. And now who had it? People who are a little more like, I like technology, but I'm not going to be the first guy. That was the second round. And this third round, it's hard to go to a house now where your grandma doesn't have a Google Home or an Alexa, right? So that same idea happens throughout technology. And essentially, this is what Bitcoin is, right? It's just a piece of technology. And what we're saying is that in the next round, which is in 4 years or 3 years from now, countries are going to start adopting Bitcoin. Right now, it's these massive companies. Then it's going to be these massive countries. And once we get to that point, then Bitcoin is just going to be what everyone knows. Your grandma's going to know it. You're going to know it. Your grandma's probably going to have some because it's going to be a way of doing transactions now. And that's why paying attention to those cycles is so important.
Yeah, so one of the things that I want to add, what you're describing is called an adoption curve. It's an S curve. So you have the visionary, that's the first one. Then you have the experimenter. Then you have the early adopter. Then you have early majority. Then you have late majority and laggers. So your grandma's laggers. They're like, oh, it'll never work. It'll never work. They're the one that's forced to buy it. Because it'll be like everyone will be using it. If they don't use it, like they can't interact with other people anymore. It's kind of like, oh, phone will never become a thing. But when once everyone has a phone, you have to get a phone.
Yeah. So don't be a lagger is what we're saying, because then Bitcoin's going to be $200,000 for one, and you're going to be hating yourself. Let's listen to this other message.
Hey, nerds. You guys into Ethereum or Cardano right now? And what are your thoughts on how far Bitcoin's going to go this year? I've heard rumors of up to 100,000.
Okay, so 100,000, that's actually the low end. I think I'll go higher because the backdrop, so like all the corporations trying to buy it, and then because of the limited supply, they won't be able to get that much. So for example, Tesla bought 1.5 billion. That's only one company out of S&P 500, but there's like hundreds of companies. Imagine Apple trying to get some, then Amazon trying to get some. So once they start to buy, they're going to squeeze the price to a lot higher. Secondly, I worked on Ethereum. So Ethereum, how do I describe this? So I worked on Ethereum. Ethereum have a lot of problems, right? But if you want to speculate on the price, that's completely fine. Ethereum will go up a lot this cycle too. But right now, my main focus is on Cardano because Cardano solves the scalability problem that Ethereum have. Ethereum trying to solve scalability too. But it's just taking too long, and it's pricing out all the normal users. All right, let's listen to the next message.
So, as Bitcoin continues to get bigger and more widely accepted worldwide, what is it going to do to the value of the dollar?
So, before we answer that, I want to add one last thing to answer the last question. We are into Cardano. We are into Ethereum. We are going to have other episodes about it where that's all we talk about. But I just want to kind of recap that. We think Cardano is a great option. It's at a good price. If you want to kind of get into that and have something, that's a good option. Ethereum is going to go up in price if that's what you're caring about. But it does have some issues that are unresolved, and we don't know if they're going to get resolved. So that's just those two. As far as Bitcoin goes and how far it could go, 100,000 kind of was in the 5 months ago. That's kind of the number that people were throwing out. But if you do the math now on what all of everybody's saying and you do an average, I think I've heard the average is like at 288 would be the average price that it should get to this year. So just to wrap that one up. So now I'll let you take it away and answer the one about what is Bitcoin going to do to the dollar.
Okay, just look at the price chart of Bitcoin to the dollar. Bitcoin is going up a lot, right? So what that's telling you is the dollar is hyperinflating against Bitcoin. So what happened is Bitcoin is going to force all the other assets to its real value. And then I'll explain to you guys how the mechanics of this is done. But yeah, so right now the dollar is hyperinflating against Bitcoin, essentially.
And that means that it's losing more, like your purchasing power, how much you can buy with it, is going down against what Bitcoin can do. That's what that means.
Yeah, so you're losing your purchasing power real fast.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of reasons why, but it's going to be a super long discussion. And maybe we can go through this podcast a little bit later.
Let's go ahead.
Cool, thanks guys. Where are you investing in Cardano? I have Binance right now, but I'm not sure if I can. I don't think I could find Cardano on there. Any suggestions?
So I right now I'm staying in the US. In US, I don't have access to like the real Binance. I'm thinking you're using Binance US, which is like the crappy version of Binance, which they don't have all that options for alts. One app that you can use that's available to people residents of US is a Voyager. So if you go to CoinGecko and type VGX, that's the ticker, and then a Voyager token will pop up. And then so they're like Celsius. Celsius is another token. They're except that Celsius is a lending and borrowing platform. Voyager is a brokerage for crypto. And so you can buy your crypto on their platform and then they'll pay you interest. So essentially you can buy and hold on their platform and they'll pay you interest for whatever token you have on there. And then Cardano is available on Voyager.
So let me unwrap all of that. Voyager is actually a coin you can also buy. And they have a platform or a place you can go to and you can buy other cryptocurrencies, Cardano being one of them. Through that website. But I do want to mention CoinGecko because I think it's a wildly underrated place. Anytime you want to know about any coin, right? Because they're going to keep popping up and you're going to want to know about more other coins. If you go to CoinGecko, you find that coin on that website. It'll give you all of the information, not only what it's trying to solve, but you can find where to buy it, market caps, all of the data you need about that is on CoinGecko for 100% free. You don't need to even make an account. It's just ready to go. So check out, it's just one word, CoinGecko. Check it out right there. But yeah, Voyager would be a really good place for you to do that. We can go back to the conversation about the dollar and hyperinflation and what that really means to us and what that really means to people who are leaving all of their money in cash or just regular dollar versus those who are going to start holding Bitcoin.
Okay, yeah. So one other thing, I'm not sure if you're a U.S. citizen, you probably know this. Like we have a lot of debt. We have like $27 trillion or something more than that of debt. So most of that money is owned to ourselves. Liability, Medicare liability, Social Security liability, like pension funds. So what happened is that the U.S. doesn't have the ability to pay ourselves back. So what they're going to do is print money. Because there's only three ways for a government to generate revenue. First one is taxation. Second one to borrow. Third is to print. So taxation is unfavorable because if I raise the taxes, you're not going to be happy because you don't want to pay more to the government, right? So that one's done. Right. The second one is like to borrow more money. And then you look at how much money you already own. You're like, oh, shit, there's no way I can pay it back. Fuck that. I don't want the number to go up. And the third one is to debase your dollar, debase your money, essentially. Essentially, that's a way for government to steal from you without the number in your bank account to change.
Yeah. So like Sam said earlier, it's a much deeper conversation and there's so much that goes into it. But what we're saying is the value of the dollar is going to come down. What you can buy is going to decrease much faster than it has in the past because it's always done that. The value of the dollar has always gone down year by year. So, but now it's going to be much faster if this mass adoption happens as it's being planned. We have a message here.
This is kind of off topic, but what are the online banks like Chime, Netspend, there's some other ones that I can't think of. What is that doing to traditional banks like Wells Fargo and Chase?
I personally think the traditional banking system will die off in a couple of years. There's multiple reasons for that. So you got to understand how banks make their money, right? The banks make a lot of their money through lending and then lending to charge an interest rate, right? So central bank is a bank that lends to other banks. So when they lower their interest rate, the commercial bank also had to lower their interest rate. So when they lower their interest rate, the amount of money they make goes down, but they have a lot of overhead. You see, there's a bunch of banks around you and there's people working in there. So their margin is getting squeezed. So it's going to become harder and harder for them to survive. So So when the government come out with their own digital currency, they're gonna wipe out all the commercial bank, because one of the thing, one of the service that commercial bank provides is an intermediary between you and the money printer. So they borrow money from central bank at a lower interest rate and loan it to you at a higher interest rate. But if a government create a digital currency, or you go to a like an online, like you said, the online banking system, they have advantage over traditional banks, is because first of all, like the one that you just talked about, they don't have a physical location. Without a physical location, there's no overhead. So that's a plus. That's why they can give you better service at a lower rate, which the traditional bank couldn't. And that's why they're gonna, they either have to shrink or they're done.
Yeah.
So can a traditional bank, like let's use Chase for example, will they go out of business, or could they adopt Bitcoin into their business model?
So yeah, so that's actually one of the thing about Bitcoin. So I earlier I was talking about how Bitcoin is gonna force everything in our life to reprice, and one of the mechanism for Bitcoin to reprice itself is actually for major banks to adopt it. So as major banks realize it's harder for them to make money through lending, what they're gonna do is buy Bitcoin, then sell it as a like a futures. So a futures contracts allow you to buy Bitcoin at a certain time at a certain price. But with that contract, you have a premium on top of it. So what a big bank can do is buy Bitcoin through the miners, and then sell on the futures market, and then they can capture that spread, which means the difference. So that's how they can survive. But what happened with that is, it'll force other investors to reprice the asset they own, because that premium is very wide and the margin is really high, because they can make a lot of money through that. So what happened is, let's say you're a stock investor, right? And then you make like 10% a year. But with the other strategy where you buy Bitcoin then sell it on a futures market, you can make 20% a year. For you, you'll be like, all right, that's risk-free, because you're literally taking from one, sell it to the other immediately and capture that difference. Because it's risk-free, a lot of people are going to do that. So for them to get money to do that strategy, they have to sell other assets. And then that's how Bitcoin is going to force all the other assets to reprice itself into Bitcoin. And that's how Bitcoin, the price of Bitcoin, will go up to like millions.
So another word, and forgive me if I'm saying this incorrectly, but with the whole GameStop, right? Everybody became suddenly an expert on how to trade, and everybody was talking about options, get some options. So that's essentially what the futures are. So you say, I am committing to buying GameStop in that case, or in this case, it's going to be Bitcoin. I'm committing to buying, let's say, 100 Bitcoin for this price right now. And if it goes up, then I make money. And that's where that 20% and the 10% that Sam is talking about comes from. So if you know anything about options, that's essentially the same thing.
Kind of, but like with futures. So with options, you have the option of taking delivery or not. So like, if it doesn't hit your price, blah, 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 it's literally expired, worthless. But with futures, you have to take it. You have to buy it.
Okay, there we go.
Yeah, that's why it's risk-free, right? So for example, let's say I buy a futures contract that's expiring December 2021. And let's say you're betting on Bitcoin going over 100,000. So the premium on that, let's say 100,000, you pay $2,000 in premium, which is 2%. So it's going to be $102,000. For one Bitcoin, right? And so what happened is the bank can just buy Bitcoin today at 46,000 and sell you that. And then you had to buy it from him for 100,000.
Yeah.
And that's how they capture the... So they're just trying to make the spread, which means the difference of price. And that's it.
I think this is a good time to throw this in there. This is not financial advice, right? I am actually a lot less well-versed on trading and all of that. Sam, on the other hand, does this professionally, that he's been doing this for at least a decade. So at the end of the day, while we may have the knowledge together, this is not financial advice. We're not telling you what to do, how to spend your money, how to invest or anything. We're just simply throwing out the knowledge that we have in hopes that it gets people to look into it themselves. So let's go back to, again, to just Bitcoin and what Bitcoin is going to do for us. So we know that it's going to get adopted. We know that countries are going to accept it. But there are also people out there that say that Bitcoin is going to be banned. Like we saw right now with, I think it was Nigeria, right? They said, well, the government said banks can no longer accept anything Bitcoin related. Right. And there are a lot of people who are saying that's going to happen everywhere. And once the government says it's banned, that's it. Your money, your Bitcoin is worthless. Everybody lost all of their money. So let's talk about why that's really not a thing that could happen. Or if it is, it's just a very, very long shot.
Okay. Here's one of the reasons, right? So in Africa, you heard about the Zimbabwe story, right? Where they hyperinflated their currency.
Yeah.
Yeah. So with the Bitcoin, what Bitcoin does in Nigeria right now is actually going to pump up the price even more. So because they know the government is trying to ban it because of the threat to the government, people's like, oh, they're going to devalue our currency now. So now we're going to go get as much Bitcoin as we can so we can trade among ourselves. That's number one. So number two, so US and Nigeria will have a completely different government system, right? Our governance system is completely different. One of the things with institutional adoption is that it eliminated the risk of getting banned. So think about this, right? Who control the politicians?
Big companies and all the lobbyists and whoever can pump the most money controls the government.
Cool. If Tesla, which is an $800 billion company, do you think they have lobbyists?
100%.
Okay. Do you think Apple have lobbyists?
100%.
Okay. Do you think Amazon have lobbyists?
Yes. All the big names, they all have lobbyists in Congress telling Congress how to move and create laws and all that.
Cool, right? So Tesla right now already own Bitcoin, right? Let's say, imagine this crazy world in the next couple of months, Apple buys $2 billion of Bitcoin. And Amazon buys $3 billion of Bitcoin, and Congress is trying to ban it. You don't think Amazon is to protect its own interests and have its lobbyists telling, hey, big guy, you want to get reelected? This is what you're going to do.
Yeah.
That's the thing with this network, right? So unlike Facebook, which is a social network, Bitcoin is a monetary network. So when you adopt the Bitcoin standard, When other people attack this network, everyone in this network is going to try to protect it. So essentially, more rich people is going to be in Bitcoin, the more secure it is, because there's no regulatory risk anymore. Because those big guys who have owned all the lobbyists, they're going to be like, hey, you can't ban this.
Yeah. And you did mention, though, you said, well, we have a very different government structure than other countries. So what about those other countries? What are the risks there where you look at a government like China, where they have a lot more power, right? Can they ban it?
They tried 3 times and they don't work.
It didn't work.
So the biggest crypto exchange in the world, AKA Binance, is a Chinese company.
Yeah.
Think about it. The most, I would say North Korea is the first. China is probably the second most totalitarian regime in the world. If they couldn't do it, what odds do you think a democratic country have?
Yeah. So I think right now, you talk to people about it and everybody has, well, it's not going to work because of this. It's not going to work because of that. And I think all of those objections, people can satisfy. So I think at this time, it'd be a dumb move to not put 5% or 1% of your money, knowing that the upside is so large. I think that by the end of this cycle, we're going to have a much, the conversation's not going to be like, oh, Bitcoin is bullshit. It's going to be like, oh yeah, I don't have any, but I want to buy some. Let's listen to this one.
Yo, what's the best cryptocurrency to invest in right now?
I'm gonna start with this answer, just because, again, like we just said, I know you probably weren't part of the podcast in a little bit, but Sam and I are in different trajectories when it comes to investing. So I'm very risk adverse, meaning I want to take the least amount of risk to make the most amount of money. So I think investing in the top names. So if I go to CoinGecko right now and I look at the top 10 projects, I would say a lot of good options there. Obviously, Bitcoin, Ethereum, DOT is coming up, Cardano is coming up. So there are a lot of big names there. I don't feel comfortable telling you, like, go put all your money in this one, because you should diversify. And that goes with cryptocurrency and any other money. So you should definitely look into what those are and what you feel comfortable with. But with that all said, if you put your money in Bitcoin right now, you're not going to go wrong with that. That's just my opinion.
Yeah. So one of the, I would say for like people that's not into crypto, I've been in crypto for a long time, more than 6 years, 8 years.
Yeah.
I was telling this guy to get Bitcoin 2013. Yeah. That's how
and I didn't.
I was in. Yeah, but
and I hate myself for it.
No, but here's the thing, right? Risk adjusted, Bitcoin is the best bet, because I don't know how old you are, how much money you have, how much risk you want to take. Because I trade professionally. Like, this is a bunch of questions I gotta ask before I can like tell you to put all your money in one thing. But Bitcoin is a no brainer. Like, if you can do like 80% Bitcoin, 20% Ethereum. If you're younger, I would a little bit more on probably like 25% Ethereum, 25% Cardano, 25% DOT, and 25% Bitcoin. Because DOT, Cardano, and Ethereum, they're all smart contract platforms. So they have the odds of higher outperformance, but Bitcoin is the safest bet. All right. Yeah. We have like 3 messages. Let's go through them.
Yeah, I got Ethereum and Bitcoin. That's the one I'm currently invested in.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so I think that's perfect. If you, like you said, like Sam was saying, if you're on the younger side, if you have no family, nobody that depends on your income, you can diversify a little bit and put a little money into those other two that we mentioned. Those are just examples. And those have really good upside right now. They're doing some good things. They're trying to solve some good problems. So I would suggest you look into those again through CoinGecko would be a good place. Go check them out and read about them.
All right, let's see another.
Again, thanks a lot, guys, for the convo and the info. My plan is to probably throw $200 into Cardano, probably another $100, $200 into Ethereum, and then, you know, I probably put around $500 if possible into Bitcoin in the next coming weeks. And do you feel comfortable with CoinGecko as a place to buy through? Do you have to link your bank account through them? Can you use a debit card and purchase the coin, or is it like a brokerage place? I just bookmarked it, so haven't really got a chance to look at it yet.
RG, you can answer this. I'll be right back.
So, so that's what the spread you have is awesome. One thing that I'm a really strong believer of is dollar cost averaging. I don't know if you heard about that, but essentially what that means is you continue to buy so that if the price is up, you buy less. If the price is down, you buy more. But you're always buying. And this way, you don't miss out on those dips. This way, you get rid of FOMO or fear of missing out. So I would suggest that if you have steady income, go ahead and set that up. Now, as far as CoinGecko goes, I don't even know if you can actually purchase from there. I think they're just a source of information. If you look at any one of the coins and you click on it, you can see where to buy and they'll direct you to other places. I'm not 100% sure if you can buy from them, so forgive me for that. I personally buy my stuff through Coinbase, but I always take it out of Coinbase. So Coinbase, you can buy it and then you can leave your money in there with them and they do whatever they need to do with it. And if you ever wanted it, they'll give it to you. But I have, and Sam also has this, you can buy it, what's called a hardware wallet. And you can tell Coinbase, look, I own half of Bitcoin. I need you to send it to my wallet. And they give you an address. And now you have a physical copy or of your Bitcoin in your possession. And so if Coinbase went down or something like that, you would not have to worry. You could do that with any of them, right? But you always want to make sure you have your Coinbase in your possession. I hope I answered all those.
Do either of you guys know what Warren Buffett thinks about Bitcoin and the future of Bitcoin?
I think he said it. Him and his partner have said it many times before. They think it's bullshit. They don't see the value in it. Warren Buffett, I mean, he's a legend, right? He started trading when he was like 9 years old or something crazy. But I think there's a lot to be said for his age. He's 90 years old. He sees things very, very differently. He is a lot, very, very risk adverse. All of his decisions come from data and plenty of history. And Bitcoin at this time doesn't have that. Bitcoin has been around since 2008, and he's invested in Coca-Cola, who's been around for hundreds of years. So, I wouldn't put too much weight into it. If you think that his advice is valuable, I 100% would agree with you on that. But I think there's two different highways, and he's on one and we're on the other, and he's kind of looking from one and saying, I don't think that one's a good one. I think you should take this road. So take that as you will.
Here's the thing about me. I had a friend who told me to create a blockchain wallet several years ago, and I did, and he was all about Bitcoin. I wasn't into it. I didn't think it was anything. After a lot of people got Bitcoins, I thought that's pretty much it. Not anymore after that. But again, several years ago, I created a blockchain wallet, and he's like, just create one. I created one, and he sent me Bitcoins. And, I created the, 10 phrase, 13 phrase, 7 phrase, whatever. And I tried to get access back to it, and I don't have my phrase saved or the password. And now there's thousands in there currently. That's what he told me.
Yeah, man, I'm sorry. That sucks. You're not alone in that one. I think Sam has something similar. You've heard of all these people who used to buy drugs on Silk Road, and they lost their hard drive. So you're not alone on that. I think if you have some inclination of how to get into it, it might be worth it in the future. If this goes to, let's say, $1 million for one Bitcoin, it might be worth it to pay someone to try to track that down, because there are people who are just doing that now. But yeah, that sucks.
Yeah, so if you forgot about it, like, one of the things that Bitcoin teaches you is responsibility and accountability. If you forgot your C phrase and you don't remember the password, you're pretty much fucked. Because Bitcoin is a bear asset. What that means is like cash. It's like final settlement. If you bury some cash and one day you like dug up the dirt, you realize the fucking ants already ate all your cash. Or you're fucked. You can't spend that money anymore. Or you dig a hole, you put your gold in there, and then you don't remember where it's at. It's gone. That's why they call it digital gold, because it's a bare asset. You can lose it and just lose everything.
But yeah, if you think it's worth it later on, maybe now, I don't know how many thousands of dollars, but if you think it's worth it, there are people who are professionally like retrieving these things for you. So you might want to look into that.
If you guys are looking into diversifying, do you guys, you know, go into stocks as well or just cryptocurrency only?
I mean, I trade stock almost every day. I have a swing portfolio where I hold long time, but I also right now, because the market is volatile enough, I also do like day trades. But the size of my account is very big, that's why I can day trade.
Yeah, and I'm on the other side of the spectrum. So I have a 9-to-5 and I have my 401k where I have a large number of my net worth. I have a Roth IRA. So I'm still doing all the conventional things as a backup, because I mean, that money is going to continue to grow with compound interest. I'm going to be able to use that money regardless of Bitcoin or not. So I do trade in that sense, but it's not active trading by any means. I put my money in and I forget about it. And whatever's left over, that's what I'm buying my cryptocurrency with.
Yeah. Also, like,
I bought Bitcoins and in the other cryptocurrency with Coinbase and crypto.com. And also you could do with Robinhood, you know, a lot of these stockbroker apps as well. Toro. Is it eToro, Atoro? I forget the name.
All right, I got this. Hold on.
Okay.
So Robinhood, they don't sell you actual Bitcoin. They sell you paper Bitcoin. So what that means is like you have a claim on whatever the money you have, but you cannot withdraw the Bitcoin into a hardware wallet. That's why you don't want to buy it from Robinhood. If you guys heard about the GameStop news like last couple of weeks, Robinhood is like, oh, you can only sell, you cannot buy GameStop. Let's say Bitcoin have a squeeze, which means like it goes up a lot super fast, and then Robinhood didn't buy the Bitcoin because they thought it was going to go down. Since you can't withdraw the Bitcoin, they can't restrict you from actually even settle that trade. That's why I don't like anything that doesn't let you withdraw your Bitcoin.
Yeah, so what Sam is saying is, let's say, so you tell Robinhood, I want to buy a Bitcoin. Let's say you're buying a whole thing. I want to buy one Bitcoin. They'll charge you the same price that it would cost you to buy it on Coinbase. But then what happens is they take your money and then they put that money to work. If Bitcoin, let's say, doubles in price overnight, you're like, oh shit, I want to take my profits. I want to sell that Bitcoin and get my money. If Robinhood hasn't gone out to buy that Bitcoin and then sold it to pay you, they can very well tell you, sorry, you can't do that. And then you miss that swing, right? Because you don't own it, they own it, and they could do whatever they want with that. Where, let's look at it the other way. You buy it on Coinbase, you withdraw it, like we said, you put it on your wallet. That thing goes up in price, you can immediately take action and do something with that money. So it's you own it versus you don't own it. And take it from me, I was dumb enough, and when I started, I didn't want to go to Coinbase and pay the 1.9% or whatever it is. So I got it on Robinhood and I got a good amount of it. And now that this this GameStop thing happened and Robinhood looks like they're going down, I had to take my money out. I had to do a short-term gain capital tax. So now I'm going to be paying a bunch of money on it because it's not the way to do it. So it may sound good. It may sound cheaper, but it's not the same thing. So be careful with that.
Oh yeah. I just want to ask something about Robinhood. So like anything you do, watching YouTube, Facebook, when you don't pay anything, you are the product. Like when you watch YouTube, they sell your data. When you use Facebook, they sell your data to advertisers. When you use Robinhood, they sell you order flow to like hedge funds. And that's how make money. You are the product. So when they get fucked, when they couldn't pay you back, they're going to protect themselves first and fuck you.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because they're going to protect their own interests. They don't want to go under. So you, the product, was like, all right, we can lose some customers, and then we can just get more. And then you eat the bag. And then GameStop have demonstrated everyone who's using it why. I mean, you don't want to get fucked. Like, they already give you the signs, all right. In the future, if this shit happens again, you might get fucked. Dude, just don't use Robinhood, man.
All right, one more.
You know, there's pros and cons, like the fiat dollar that we have in America. You know, that is could be a stinker, but you know, does the cost of, you know, mining these currency is cost effective? You know, that's one of the downside that Elon Musk was talking about. What do you guys think about that? Even though he invested in Bitcoin.
So two things. First, 40% of all Bitcoin mining is reusable. Second, actual mining of any material, gold mining, silver mining, lithium mining, use way more energy than Bitcoin. Third, Bitcoin helps you actually to generate less carbon, and here's why. So when we do fracking, the excessive natural gas get burned, and that's direct carbon injection to our atmosphere. With Bitcoin, you can convert that useless natural gas into cash. So actually, it's not useful. You don't burn it into atmosphere. So you actually generate it into electricity. It's a lot cleaner than burn it directly in air.
Yeah. So essentially, what he's saying is there are alternatives that are being used now that make it much cleaner than what people are making it out to be. Here we go.
That's cool. That's what I want to get into. There, trading nerd. I recently bought a whole bunch of stocks that almost like doubled today. It was the SNDL on cannabis stocks. That did pretty well. You know, that's what people are talking about and Wall Street Bets on Reddit.
So, okay. Should I share this G with them? Like how much money I made off GameStop?
Don't give an exact number. Just say the roundabout.
Yeah. So I made 7 figures off of GameStop. And then the way I tracked it was I was tracking it. So I explained to G this already. I was tracking it since Hertz. So last year when Hertz got pumped, and I was watching Wall Street Bets every single day because I thought it was going to come again. And that's why in December I was looking at the analysis of deep fucking value, and it made sense. Because so 2018 I traded TLRY, it was a Wii stock, and then it pumped from like $20 to $300 in like 3 weeks. And then GameStop had the exact same pattern. Also, GameStop also had so back then Tellray also had over 100% short interest. And I was like, all right, this shit's on blue the moon. So that's why I bought the call option, except I exercised my option because I know if I hold the actual share, I can tell my broker to not limit my share out, and then it'll make it squeeze higher. And yeah, I show my friend like the entire trade process. And I thought it was squeezed to like $100, but ended up squeezing to like $300. That's kind of unexpected. But yeah, I still made a lot of money through that. I also own TLRY. I bought it along with AMC, also some other ticker. Not financial advice, guys. Don't do it. All right, but here's the story. So I bought it because when the Friday where GameStop went to $75, I went through all the high short interest. So I just bought call option on all of it. And then some of them like are fucking going down, but the one that paid off paid like really, really well. Like TLRY was one of them. AMC was the other one. WWR. There's a biotech company, SAVA. They all pop like crazy because all of them have really high short interest.
So to kind of summarize that to all the people that don't trade now and just don't fully understand all that lingo. First of all, again, like I said before, do your own research. Go and read up on these things. Figure out what those terms mean and all that. Second, I think to kind of go back to the point in that message was, well, this person wants to get into trading. That specific stock that you mentioned is extremely popular right now. And I think everybody is trying to replicate what happened with GameStop. GameStop wasn't an accident. GameStop wasn't a thing that, as much as we want to believe, it wasn't something that Wall Street Bets did. GameStop was hedge funds against hedge funds doing it. And so you can, well, what happened is Wall Street Bets rode that wave and everybody tried to blame them. So we can say, look, you dumb people, this is what you did to the economy. This is what you did to trading. But if you look deep into it, it wasn't Wall Street Bets. It was hedge fund against hedge fund. So you could ride these waves. You could do what Sam just mentioned, right? He found it back in December. He got into it. He made some smart moves and he ended up making a shit ton of money, right? So go ahead and take that as you will. But what I'm saying, what I'm trying to tell you is, just because you see a stock on TikTok or on Wall Street Bets or on Facebook and somebody's talking about it, don't just go and put your money into it. Figure out, like, does it make sense or is it just a hype thing? And you never want to be the last person, the bag holder, as they call them. You never want to buy when it's on its way up and then everybody sells the next day and now your money is worth shit. So just be careful with specifically picking stocks.
What do you guys think about eToro? You know, basically you can, you know, copy these, you know, traders that are doing pretty good. Like yourself there, trading nerd. If you mean you had a profile in eToro and, you know, you have a public profile, people can actually, you know, invest a certain percentage and, you know, buy stocks and so forth and sell like you do.
All right. So this is how I'm going to respond. I think that idea is from eToro side. It might sound good, but when I first got in trading, that's essentially called a front running. So imagine, let's say I'm famous on Twitter, right? I already bought the stock. I bought it at 60 cents. Very illiquid. Not many people trading it, but I have a bunch of followers. I was like, hey guys, this stock is hot. Now you guys, after you listen to me, oh shit, this guy bought it. Now I'm going to buy it. Now you're going to pay a higher price. So I got in at 60 cents. Now you're going to buy at 61 cents, 62 cents, 63 cents. And me, because I got in first, I see you guys getting in. I dump on you guys. So I essentially make the money off of you. That's why I don't like anything with eToro or whatever. I never used it. When they come out that idea, I was actually against it. I was like, wow. So they made like a pump and dump legal. Because that's essentially what they're doing. I'm hyping my own stock, right? Obviously, when I hype it to you, I already bought it. Like, I bought it. I want you to buy it so the price will go up. So,
yeah,
really, right? Now you can see how, like, unethical it is. That's why, like, I don't post my trades. Because, like, I don't want people to buy it and then they lose money. They're like, oh, blah, 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 blah. It's like, my trade is my trade. I understand the risk, and then I took the trade. That's the mentality you got to have. You got to understand why you're taking it.
Yeah. And there are other resources. I don't personally use eToro, but like, for example, you can also do, like, you can see what Warren Buffett is trading because that is public information. But again, if you're doing that, Warren Buffett is not intentionally front running you, but if you're following their trade, he might be out of that trade by the time you get into it. So that is why it's important for you not to follow and just kind of try to lead, right? So just keep that in mind.
Speaking of Tilray, though, do you think that's enough? It's just another short squeeze that's going on, just like it did in the past?
The price action looks like it, and the volume does. Yeah. If you look at the short interest, it's over 50%. That's the whole reason why I'm in that shit. I just wanted for that one pop because it doesn't, like, they don't have any news or any justification for that kind of move. Because if you think about how you value a company, like, it just doesn't make sense. That's why I'm speculating that I bought out of money short term call. That's it. And then with the move phase, and then I'm out. I was like, yeah, that's like a proven pattern, especially in the current market.
Yeah, so you can see in the pattern, you can see that and Sam is not saying it's going to happen. Sam is saying it looks like it. I'm risking my money for something that may or may not happen. But if it does, great payout. If it doesn't, I'm shit out of luck.
Yeah, so one of
awesome. Finance Nerd, do you, when you use Coinbase, do you just use like their wallet? Do they have a wallet they give you? Is that how it works when you put your, so you say I wanted to buy Cardano, I put $50 in or whatever, get my whatever coins I get, my crypto, and then I put it into my Coinbase wallet that I have. You have to set up your wallet within Coinbase, is that, or do you get a separate wallet other than, totally outside of Coinbase? Just a little confused on that. Also, trading nerd, dude, seven figures, good job, man. Do you have any suspicion that it might squeeze again? Only because I'm holding a couple shares in AMC and GameStop, but I'm no big loss if it doesn't squeeze. But interesting tickers though, they're like identical right now, or their forms are literally identical.
So with Coinbase in the wallets, what I was referring to is I own a wallet called the Ledger Nano X to be exact. And so when I buy it from Coinbase, I have an address. So let's say that that's your wallet. And then I just tell Coinbase, send it to this other address, which is my physical wallet. So the Ledger Nano X, you can go to directly to their website. I wouldn't go to like Amazon. You can buy it from Amazon sometimes for cheaper, but I wouldn't do it. I would go directly to the website and then order that. You get it in your house, I don't know, 4 days later, 5 days later. And now once you set it up, you have a physical address or a physical wallet where you can send your stuff. And it's like an extra step in Coinbase to tell them that you want to like turn on the capability to send and receive. But yeah, highly recommend it. Let me just get through this last message, Sam, before you talk about the possibility of that short squeeze, because it's been here for a while.
Yeah, trading nerd. I'm just trying it. Of a guy, I took a look at his portfolio and his performance, his stats, and he's done really well past year and this current year. But so I threw $1,000 into that and see how that's going to work out.
Okay, so I'm going to answer that the last question we just heard, like following people, right?
Yeah.
So if you think about how trading works, in order for you to make money, someone had to buy it after you. It's supply and demand, right? So the only way you can win in this game is trying to figure something out before everyone else does. So they'll figure it out and they buy it after you and the price rise. That's what Deep Fucking Value did with GameStop. He figured out the fundamentals and the technicals on why GameStop is the biggest short squeeze ever and why it's very below its actual value. And he made over $30 million because of that. But when you follow in someone else, that means you're always behind someone. That means the guy you're following will always have an edge over you. Essentially means in trading is that he'll make money because of you or off of you. And that's why you want to follow people. And you need to start generating ideas on your own and to see if it plays out and get a journal. That's how you become successful in this game.
And at least I'm going to say this. This is not something that Sam says, but I'm not saying there aren't people who are successful following that strategy, right? I see somebody successful, I'm going to do and take on those same actions, and hopefully I'll be successful as well. There are people who are legitimately out there trying to build a community where they're sharing their knowledge and they're putting out the information so that you can benefit from it as well. But it's not that many of them. And so some of these people are doing it because the more people that buy it, the more money they make, right? So again, not saying that it can't work, not saying that you're absolutely going to lose your $1,000 that you put in, but just if you're able to pick up that skill on your own, like Sam said, pick up a journal, write things down, use platforms like Thinkorswim, where you can trade money, paper money. And it's fake money, but at least you get the practice. You get comfortable with graphs. You get comfortable with patterns. And then you slowly start putting in real money. The tools are out there, right? go ahead and try it on your own before you just take, it's really the easy way out, right? I tell Sam all the time, hey, Sam, when you find a good thing, tell me about it, because I'm trying to take the easy way out so that Sam did all the work. He put in all the time and the research, and now I want to kind of ride his coattail. And not even me, Sam doesn't feel comfortable doing that for people that are close to him, because he doesn't want to be responsible. He understands there's a large responsibility that comes with telling someone what to buy. So keep that in mind and always just really look at the information. So let's go back to that GME question and that AMC question, and if you think there's going to be another pop.
Yeah, so over the years, my partner here learned that always listen to me.
Yeah, I've made a good amount of money listening to Sam.
All right, let's talk about GME and AMC, right? So one of the things I was telling G about, you got to understand the market structure and understand which players are in the game. So like right now, we're at like the fourth inning of this game. So in order for you to figure out whether it's in the squeeze a lot, you got to understand who's holding the bags. So before, it was mostly institution and they had a lot of money and they had to get out, right? So now it's getting very saturated with retail and a lot of them are holding a bag, hoping it's going to pop. So one of the things with that is whenever it pops, which it happened last week, I told G about this. It happened in like 30 minutes. It went from like 50 to like 96. Remember I was telling you about this last week?
Yeah.
And it happened in like 30 minutes. And what happened? It got fucking sold off. Why? Because a lot of people that bought it up, they're trying to get out too. And that's what's preventing another short squeeze. The psychology have changed. So for example, you're like, because like, think about it. If you're asking me this question, how many people like you are asking the same question? Right? They're trying to get out too. So everyone's waiting for that short squeeze to happen again. And that's exactly why it won't happen. Because they all want to do the same thing. They all try to rush for the door and waiting for it. So when it actually does happen, like, they just try to rush out and it doesn't happen. That's one of the things with trading. Like, if there's a strategy that everyone knows, that strategy won't work.
Yeah, so essentially, there are different groups of people that are still in it, right? There are the groups of people who are strong believers that the game's not over. And they're holding on. They're like, screw it. Whatever I put in, I put it in. I've already written it off in my head, so I don't care what happens. I'm going to ride it to the end. There are the people who are like, oh, shit, I got in. Nobody told me this is how this worked, and now I'm just trying to get my money back. So anytime there's a small pump and they can cover their losses, they get out. There are the people who are waiting for a bigger pop, right? So it went from 40 to 96. No, it's going to go more. I'm going to wait, and then they lose that opportunity. So you got to figure out who you are, and if you've written it off, more power to you. Write it out. Maybe one day you get lucky and you go out with a bang. But another thing is there are tools that are going to help you minimize those risks. So if you are a guy who bought it and you're just kind of watching your phone and you log in every 10 minutes to see the price and you're saying, okay, when it gets to good price, I'm going to click buy and do it. You're not going to be as fast as the guy who put in an automatic order for it to sell as soon as it hit that number without them looking at it. Right. So utilize the resources you have to make sure that you get as much as you can back out. So, yeah, just like always, like I'm going to always say, if you keep listening to us, you're always going to hear me say this. Do your own research. Make sure you understand what you're going into. Maybe it's $100 you put in, but maybe $100 to you is a lot of money. So just always make sure that you understand and you feel comfortable with what you're going into.
Yo, so like the reason why we started this podcast is like we're trying to teach people how to make a lot of money. That's why it's called a 100X project, right? So essentially, like every Wednesday we're going to do this. We're going to talk about like different crypto projects. So every single episode, like the first episode, we're going to talk about Bitcoin. Next episode, we're going to talk about Ethereum. Right. So every single episode will be a new crypto. And I'll explain you why the tokenomics works, like why we put money is going to go up and why we eventually it might like destroy itself. Like, why are you going to lose money investing in this project? I'll give you the reasons why. And then you guys can decide whether to invest in it or not. Right? Not financial advice for educational and entertainment purposes only. Just in case.
And just so you guys know, I think there's a big culture, depending on how old you are now, I'm starting to notice that anytime somebody mentions a business, so let's say I want to start a business and I go out and I have a referral link for something and I want to make some money, people are very quick to say, I'm not going to support that person because they're trying to profit off of me. That's not our goal, to profit off of you. Our goal truly, truly is to grow a community where we can teach people what we're doing and help them with the tools so they can continue the research. But eventually, inevitably, we are going to try to make money off of this to fund all of these things that we're doing. So if you are here right now, and you're sticking around and you subscribed and you like what you're hearing, just know that we're not going into this for money. We're going into this for education and empowerment. So we hope that you spread the message and you get people to listen and help us do it. Now, going back to that 100X project, the project that we're taking on is Sam and I are going to put $500 each. We're going to try to multiply that times 100, so make $100,000. And we want to document that progress. What did we do? Why did we make that decision? And give you all the resources. So for example, what we started doing is we signed up with Grow with Google. And we are both starting to take all the certifications for Google Ads. And that's completely free. You just make an account and you're good to go. So from that, we're going to try to make a little bit of money and invest that money. So we're going to act as if we had $0 in the bank account, but we had a computer and we had some working knowledge of how the internet works. And then we're going to document that as well. So I hope you guys enjoy that, but we got a message.
Do you guys have anything else besides the show in stereo, which is great, by the way, like a Discord? Do you have like a server?
So that's something we want to start. This idea came about. We've had it for a while, and I'll give you a little more background into why, but the short answer is we are going to build it. We just have to learn how to do all these things. We do have a podcast on Anchor that gets, so we basically grab this podcast here. We load it onto Anchor, which then puts it on like Google Podcast and Spotify and things like that. So we're trying to reach more people that way. We are in the progress of creating a YouTube channel where we can upload these conversations as well. So we're doing a little bit of everything. So if you guys have suggestions like that Discord, that was awesome. We're going to go ahead and build those.
So I want to ask something on YouTube channel. We most likely we're going to start posting our brainstorm sessions and the business idea that we come up with. Like, so right now, like G said, we're doing a Grow with Google. So like on the YouTube channel, like you're going to see our faces and then we're going to show you guys, hey, this is how we build a business, A, B, and C. So one of the challenge that G suggested is that, all right, the question he asked is like, can anyone become a millionaire? And then my first answer was no. Then we're like, all right, can we become a millionaire ourselves without using the existing skills that we already have? So I can't use trading and programming because I already have that skills, right? So in order for like a random person, because I don't know what your skill sets are, to like start a business from scratch and make a multi-million business, we had to do something that we don't know either. So throughout this journey, like we had to learn the skill completely from scratch. So if like during the YouTube channel, if we post our videos and then you can see our progress, and then if we're actually on track of building like a multi-million dollar company from like nothing and doing it, then everyone who's listening to us should be able to follow our process and do it too.
Yeah. So a little more background into why or where this idea came from. So Sam, if you've been here for a while in the podcast, you heard Sam does this professionally. Sam has been wildly successful. I personally have been successful in my own terms where I live a very comfortable life, and I have everything that I need, and I can enjoy myself the way I would like to enjoy myself. I'm by no means a millionaire, but again, very comfortable. So we want to provide that to other people, because so many people have just been shitted on through COVID, through just life in general. And we know that there are people out there that have the capability of doing this, but they just need a little tiny push. And Sam and I were having this conversation one day over dinner, and it's like, what can we do to help that out? And so this is our way of doing that. But yeah, so I think, I don't know, I can keep going, but I think we should wrap this one up. And just to put a nice little bow on it, talk about why Bitcoin is or is not going to be successful. Should you put money into it? And according to us, again, not investing advice, and just kind of next steps. And then we'll talk about Ethereum on the next episode.
Okay. You want me to go first or you want to go first?
No, you just go for it. I'll let you do this one.
Yeah. So I think Bitcoin is going to be successful because it solved a big problem that we all have. The government is stealing our money and purchasing power without actually like do anything to our bank account. So by them injecting more money, it makes our money less valuable, and then it creates like a huge social problems. You see the rich get richer and the poor gets poorer. So eventually the society will collapse if they keep doing it. But I think like because of internet and all these these valuable information online, I think slowly but suddenly people are going to wake up to this, and they're going to see it. They're going to see the truth. And that's why Bitcoin is being successful. Because people realize this is a technology for the people and not for the 1%, even though I'm part of the 1%.
Motherfucker. yeah, so should you put money into it as much as you're comfortable risking? At the end of the day, nothing in life is risk-free. As much as you're comfortable risking with, again, tremendous upside, go ahead and put that in. Don't get left behind. I got my father-in-law to put some in, and he did it, I don't know, back in April, and he's made a good amount. He's made, I think like 10 grand. And you could not believe how much this 60-year-old man talks to me about Bitcoin now. He sends me articles. He's super excited about it. So get on that train. Let it make you happy. It's great to look at your account and be like, shit, I woke up and made 3 grand out of nowhere. Now, you are going to lose 3 grand out of nowhere too, because the swings are massive, but it's really good. And it gets you to start like saying, well, if I could do this, what else can I do? So give that a shot. We have one last message here, and then we're going to wrap things up.
Yeah, I do like your show, and I like your ideas and where you guys are going with your YouTube videos. I do want to keep tracking that. And so how do we know when your next show is, or is there a way to get updates, like on Twitter, again, your YouTube channel, and any other social media accounts?
I think for now, the best way is going to be here until we update everybody on what happened. I don't know how comfortable people are with like creating a mailing list, but that would be the easiest way for us. So if you want, if you're truly, truly interested, send us an email right now to hello@meetastrangerpodcast.com. I'll repeat that one more time. So just the word hello@meetastrangerpodcast.com. And then we'll figure out how to do it. Again, we're just kind of figuring this shit out as we go. We want to talk about all that so that if you want to start this, you can follow the steps. So, that'd be awesome. And thank you for the support. One last thing that we are also doing, to kind of make some immediate impact, as we hit these, to kind of keep with the 10X theme and the 100X theme, as we gain followers, we're going to start giving money back. So right now we've set ourselves a goal of 100 followers. So when we hit 100 followers, we're going to send $10 out. When we hit 1,000 followers, which is 10X, we're going to send $100 out. And we're going to continue to grow that. And the ultimate goal is, I know it sounds extremely crazy, But if we get to 10,000 followers, we want to give out $1 million. We'd have to figure out the logistics and the legality of that. But imagine just for listening, you get $1 million, changes your life. That would be fucking amazing for me. So one more message.
Question. I have been wanting to for a while, but where do I start? Like, is there like a good app, a good website to like invest? And what would I invest in? Because I know there have been a couple internet trends, but I don't think I should trust those.
Yeah, so that's an awesome question, a very, very common question. I think what I would ask you first, if I had you in front of me, would be, what are you trying to invest in, right? Because the word investing means you acquire or you get an asset that's going to make you more money. So are you trying to invest in cryptocurrency? Then websites like Coinbase or Kraken are a good place to start. Are you trying to invest in stocks? Then something like Fidelity would be a good place. Are you trying to invest in like retirement accounts? Then Vanguard is a great place. So it really depends on what you want to invest in. And then once you figure out what that is that you want to invest in, then you would want to just do the research on those things. If you subscribe to us, we'll probably cover a lot of these topics in following episodes. So I would suggest if you want to just kind of do that, that would be a good first step. But just really decide, what am I trying to invest in? And that would be your first step.
All right, man. I think we have to wrap this up. It's like 2 hours.
Yeah, we're going to wrap it up, guys. Again, subscribe. We'll be on here on Stereo every Wednesday. Between 8 and 8:15. And then as we start building the rest of the social media, then we'll keep you guys updated. If you guys want to keep up to date right now, immediately, hello@meetastrangerpodcast.com. Let us know that you're interested and we'll keep you updated that way because it'll be manageable. So have a good night, guys, and we'll talk to you next week.
Peace. As always, thank you for listening to us. And remember, if you want to be part of the conversation, send us an email to hello@meetastrangerpodcast.com. Talk to you strangers next time.